This is your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from my home in suburban Chicago. Recently, I was invited to be a guest on a podcast hosted by an industry friend, Joe Tarnowski, Vice President of Content for ECRM, which brings buyers and sellers together across the CPG retail industry. Joe allowed me to share our conversation as an episode of IRI Growth Insights. Check out the show notes for this episode for links to the reports and webinar mentioned, as well as a link to Joe's podcast. And for more information, please visit iriworldwide.com for an invaluable, regularly updated COVID-19 dashboard and other reports.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Joe Tarnowski here with ECRM, and I have with me today Joan Driggs, the Vice President of Content and Thought Leadership for IRI, which just gave a great webcast on the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on retail and CPG. So I'm going to have a link to that webcast in the episode notes. So Joan, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
It's great to finally be able to collaborate again. For those of you who don't know, Joan and I worked together in the past and in the trade media industry. So we've stayed in touch ever since. So now she's on IRI, I'm on ECRM. So hope all's going well over there in Chicago.
It is. Thanks. We're not quite the epicenter of New York as you are, Joe, but it's still crazy times.
Yeah, here I see the numbers going up and up, and we're approaching 100,000 cases. So I'm barely leaving the house now.
Well, I'm glad you're safe in place, Joe.
I'm trying. I think people realize the gravity of the situation now, so they're a lot better as far as social distancing and all that. It is impacting our industry. So, and that's what we're going to talk about. So I guess to start off, can you give a little bit of an overview of some of the high level stuff that you discussed in the webcast, and then we'll kind of dig into some of the points and our thoughts about them.
Sure. Thanks. So for several weeks, IRI has been putting out some reports, both in partnership with BCG, Boston Consulting Group, and just through our own thought leadership at IRI. We've also been tracking consumer sentiment over the past several weeks, and that's been really interesting to see how consumers are shifting their attitudes, their behaviors, their purchasing habits. It's all been extremely fast-paced, but really interesting. And the webinar that you referenced, we actually did in cooperation with FMI. So really, we're trying to speak to more of the grocery retailer and that end of the business. What we're trying to do is answer a lot of the questions that we're getting peppered with from clients, from industry, and a lot of it is, what happens next? What can we learn from the past? Tell us what we need to know about assortment and what we should be having on the shelves. How can we best address consumer anxieties and try and lessen that? So those were all things that we touched on in that webinar and in our thought leadership reports.
Excellent. And I have some specific theories on what's going to happen coming up in the near future. But let's talk a little bit about, how this has been impacting us right now, or what you've been seeing, because you mentioned something about recession-like behaviors that are happening among consumers.
Sure. So, there's a couple things that we can learn from both past crises, and I'm thinking most specifically about hurricanes, and things like the recession or past recessions, because both of them are, things that maybe weren't anticipated, and consumers react emotionally. They react in different ways as they accept what's happening. And in fact, it's interesting. Just yesterday, I heard a news report that said that so much of the shopping behavior is as if a hurricane hit the entire country. Hmm. So I think that we truly can go back to what happened with the hurricanes Irma and Harvey in 2017. And we can see, you know, what happened with people doing, massive pantry stocking, a lot of canned goods, a lot of pasta. And we're seeing that right now. But then, of course, we see like the drop off after people kind of recovered. And some people are stuck with a lot of canned goods and pasta. In this case, we know from watching areas like Italy, which is like 3 weeks ahead of us, that people are still working their way through the pantry. But at the same time, they really don't want to lose too much stock. So the purchasing is going down a little bit, but it's still at levels elevated pre-COVID-19. So again, softening a little bit in those purchases, but they're still high.
You know,
I just want to say one thing, Joe. And that is, I think that what's different for this overall and that people really need to understand is that the U.S. food dollar used to be split between out-of-home, like restaurants and food service, and in-home. And now that food dollar has like nearly completely shifted to in-home, and that is a huge shift in how consumers behave, purchase, you know, manage their day-to-day. It's upheaval.
You know, I'm glad you added that thought because I'm a case study in that. You know, I am a typical New York City apartment dweller. My cupboard is empty. My fridge is empty. And I was caught a little flat-footed in that I don't know how to shop for myself. I don't cook that much. So, you know, I was going out after the mad rush trying to find whatever I could, picking up canned stew and all this. And it was just, I learned a lot about that, you know, becoming that kind of consumer. Like, for example, it wasn't until I did a podcast with Kim Kircher. You probably know her.
Yeah,
I did. It wasn't until I did a podcast with her about how this is changing the way people view food that I realized, you know, I don't have any frozen vegetables at all. And because she was talking about how it's a healthy option for stuff that will last a long time. And so then I ran to the grocery store and I scrounged whatever I could. But so it's really changed the way. And I'm doing a few levels. I'm shopping for fresh foods for consumption now because I want to try and eat as healthy as I can now. But also I want the shelf-stable stuff for later. And then I have my what I call my doomsday stash. Like 36 Clif bars, peanut butter Clif bars, that I can survive on one or two a day if it gets to that point. And I'm constantly constantly refreshing those or adding a little bit here and there, getting some more meat, getting to put in the freezer, you know. So, I thought that was very interesting because it relates to something I'm going through personally.
Right. Well, a lot of what we're seeing even in shopping now is that there is a definite uptick in fresh purchases because people went through that panic stock up, bought a lot of those very shelf-stable pantry items, which you have no room for in your house, but a lot of America certainly does. And but people are saying, okay, you know, I need to create a lot of meals. And think about it, for many households, it's three meals for a number of people every day. So they are absolutely buying more fresh to kind of offset a lot of the shelf stable. And they're saying, like they tell us, you know, week to week that they're buying more fresh than they had been. And again, it's just the next wave after that big offshoot of, you know, panic stocking.
Mm-hmm. And they're buying more store brands, you mentioned, obviously because they want some value.
Well, you know, we're not actually seeing a lot of the numbers right now, but that is definitely coming, especially for a couple of reasons. One, it's a recessionary behavior. You know, people turn to store brands and compare our current economic, situation, which is pretty dire, with the recession. And that's, you know, a good 10 years or so. Retailers have really, over that period of time, really invested heavily in their store brands. So a lot of retailers are really sophisticated and have several tiers of quality in store brands. So to me, it'll be really interesting to see if consumers are maybe starting with that top tier, thinking that this is the next best equivalent to their national brand, or if they're really going to go in for the economy and maybe go to some of those lower tiers. So the other part of it is that consumers are faced with out of stocks. So as they're at the shelf and they don't have the products that they want, they're going to be looking for store brand alternatives. They're going to be looking for even products that maybe are less popular, what we call in our business is having less household penetration. Maybe there's a lower price point. And for both store brands and those lower tier or lower household penetration products, it's a great opportunity. You know, people are paying money to sample a product that they're not sure about. So it's up to those companies or those retailers to really get consumers to stick with that purchase. It's a great opportunity right now for those brands.
Well, we've been seeing that, and I guess, you know, when you're in panic mode, brand loyalty goes out the window. It's just survival. And what's happening, I spoke with Albertsons Marketplace earlier this week, and actually that was the second time I did a podcast interview with him in 3 weeks because so much has changed. And what he was talking about was because of the mad rush in the stores themselves, and it's causing supply issues up the supply chain with their, you know, manufacturers, a lot of their consumers are flocking to the marketplace, which is an endless aisle concept, and they're moving on to those, you know, for what he gets from the marketplace are usually emerging brands that are not in the stores. So they're just coming in and they're just searching on rice. And, you know, so he's got like a gourmet rice company that now with sales is booming because there's nobody else that has rice and they do direct to consumer. But what his hope is and what his plan is he wants a lot of these brands on the marketplace that stepped up to ultimately go into the stores. But this is forcing trial, you know, whether they like it or not. It's forcing trial, and you're right. It is opportunities for these emerging brands to kind of step up, become the heroes, and at the same time, grow their business.
You know, and coming out of this situation, if those brands do well, they might be taking shelf space from some of those brands that had been the powerhouse brands pre-COVID. So it really is, it's kind of resetting the playing field, if you will, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out because, you know, post-recession, post-crises, there's always some different winners and losers emerging. So it's always interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. Another thing you talked about was cost versus convenience. And I found that particularly interesting, especially by me, because you know, I go to the mass retailer or the grocery stores 2 weeks ago. It's really hard to find stuff, but I can go to the gourmet marketplace. Like during that time, I would switch to the gourmet market across the street, which is a little more expensive, or in some cases, you know, a lot more expensive. But you know what? Rather than waiting on a line or dealing with the crowds or anything, I can go in and out and, you know, get my things. So for me, definitely the convenience thing was more of an issue for me, but I think for some consumers, they got to balance it out.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it is a dual thing. In fact, my husband, same thing. He said, hey, there's like no crowds at like our health food store, which, you know, if hard pressed, we could walk to. And he's like, let's just buy stuff there. Well, it's more expensive. So you know, it is something that you weigh out. And there's a lot of consumers, and this, again, I mentioned that we're doing consumer research week to week, and there are consumers who are already vulnerable, you know, who are already struggling to buy needed groceries. And now that group is just going up and up and up. I mean, you've seen the unemployment numbers, you know, 10 million unemployed in the last couple of weeks, unprecedented. There's a lot of people who are really, they're vulnerable and they can't really afford to just take what's out there. They really have to hunt around. There's also a lot of households that can't afford to even stock up. So in fact, when it really comes to a down economy, we're having to opt for maybe smaller package sizes that aren't as economically, you know, economically the viable or the right choice to make. So it's really a challenging time. But you're right. If some people, you know, it's the households with children who are more likely to go out and find what they need wherever they need it. Households without children, they're a little quicker to walk away, you know, from an empty shelf or not getting exactly what they want. So many different choices for every single household.
Yep. I mean, me having no kids, it's a lot more flexibility because it's just me and I don't have a few hungry people at home waiting for dinner.
You and your Cliff Bars, right?
My Cliff Bars. Well, like I said, those are the doomsday. That's the doomsday, you know. I'm trying to eat as healthy as possible for now. But, and you know, one of the things that I realized was, you know, there's so many different channels you can go to for food. And in some cases, it's shifting, or not shifting, but morphing. For example, there's a restaurant in my neighborhood who is an Italian restaurant. And they've turned themselves into a marketplace. So instead of doing takeout of meals, they're doing takeout of homemade pasta, takeout of their sauce in quart containers. They're doing meatballs some days. They switch it up. They've even changed their Seamless account to reflect the marketplace. So, you know, what are you seeing out there as far as how consumers are shopping the different channels during this whole thing?
Oh, really good question. So, you know, there's like quick shortfalls and there's also, you know, bigger opportunities. Of course, like with the big stock up, people were going to the big stores. You know, they were going to the club stores. They were going to the, you know, the large mass market ones. In fact, I want to look because in the convenience channel, what we saw truly was that convenience channels were down quite a bit, but that's because people aren't really driving. You know, there's a lot of people who are unemployed. But at the same time, I really also think that depending on where you live, there's a really great opportunity for the convenience channel because people are sticking closer to home. And if convenience can maybe change their assortment a little bit to have some of those essentials that people need, you know, dairy products, bread, maybe some cleaning products, that would really be a great shift. People, we also know, are making fewer, larger basket trips to stores, particularly like traditional grocery stores. People really want to respect social distancing. So they're going to go to the stores where they can get the most, to fulfill their needs. But at the same time, we also saw like with the drug channel, you know, the drug channel would be like a natural go-to for, you know, products that people are stocking up on that they might not even need, like for wellness. You know, they're stocking up on like cough and cold, even though they might not have a cough and cold, only because they're afraid that they won't be able to find it if they need it. People are stocking up on immunity products, like, oh my goodness, the sales for like vitamins and minerals is through the roof. But we saw that for that stock up, which is not a typical trip really for a drug, people, like the stock up sales were through the roof. Like that trip mission was through the roof for drug. So people truly were going out to like whatever stores and trying to get the most in that channel of whatever it is they were out there looking for.
And any channel in particular, well, like you said, the big box or like, you know, a dollar store or a grocery store or a big drug store when they're stocking up. And I think some of them, maybe there'll be tiers, you know, like they'll go after one level. In the beginning, obviously, the mad rush to the big box. Then I think it'll maybe get a little bit divided up as time goes on. I mean, I'm a little different because I have so many different types so close to me, but you know, somebody in a rural area, you know, it's going to vary. What about within the store? I think this is really going to, and there's something I talked to Kim a lot about. It's definitely going to help center store because people are right now they're buying all the shelf stable items, and you know, they're getting reacquainted with it. However, like, I think it's also an opportunity for the retailers to really show people how important a center store is, because it's got all the elements that you're going to use to make these meals at home, since we're cooking more at home now.
Right. And, you know, it, again, I think it's a great opportunity because people are being reintroduced to the center store. You know, it was really, I think, a lot of, again, that whole stock up. Now what do I do with it? What do I do with all those dried beans and pulses? You know, I bet people were buying stuff and they had no clue what they were going to do with it. So there's a lot of people who are on YouTube watching videos of what to make. And I think retailers and brands can play a big part of that. You know, you can look around Pinterest, you can look around YouTube. And I think the brands will be really surprised at the attributes that people are looking for in their products. I think the brands might even find that people are finding new uses or new twists on some of their product usage that they can leverage with even more consumers. So I think it's really important for retailers and brands to be on those social channels, listening to consumers and hearing what they're saying and offering whatever help, whatever incentive, whatever inspiration they possibly can. Because when this is over, you really want those consumers to stick with these products. And, you know, we've talked about this already, that food dollar, you know, people have to be pretty much convinced that eating at home is the way to go, because I predict, like, when this is over, it's like, oh, thank goodness, we can go out to eat again, or we can go grab something again. So it is definitely an opportunity for center store. And I know some companies, it's been like a godsend. You know, I mean, think about what you can do with mac and cheese. And you know, Kraft Heinz is just churning through and trying to make as much macaroni and cheese as possible.
Yep. You can definitely do a lot with it, and it's interesting because I try to stay away from too many carbs. But in this time, this day and age, I stocked up on some pasta, you know, because you never know, and it just spreads everything out a little more, and you know, so
I want to touch on that a little bit more too, because A, pasta is a known, it's comforting, and it's easy. And I think those are a lot of the products that we're going to see shifts to in like the coming weeks. You know, I think that people did their initial stock up, and I think now people are buying more of the comfort stuff. Like, okay, I'm going to be locked in place, or we're going to be homebound for a while. This has to, you know, we still have to have fun. We still have to be social to some degree. What am I going to do that's going to make me feel good? So I think that more snacks, more sweet treats, more alcohol, you know, like, let's make it more of a social thing. And we do see people reaching out on video chat. I would imagine that we're going to go beyond the coffee or the cocktails to things like appetizers, showing off like things that you've baked, things that you've cooked, maybe even having virtual dinner parties. We have to find new ways of staying connected, and a lot of these food items really lend themselves to supporting that.
Yep, and there are already apps out there for virtual happy hours, and I'm sure how retailers need, you know, you're right, they need to get in the game, they need to get on social, they need to, you know, be out there saying, okay, you got all this center store stuff, here's what you could do with it. And either do live classes. I know the guy from Albertsons, Jeff, he's hosting Pancake. They're going to make pancakes together. Him with his family, the supplier that's involved, and they're going to open it up to everybody. Then they're going to post pictures of all of the customers' pancakes that they made on their web, you know, on their social. So that kind of interactivity, the education component, letting people know what they could do with all of this stuff, but also, like you said, the engagement, because right now, at least for the next month, probably longer, this is the social engagement. So I think it's important for retailers to jump on that and make sure they're interacting. I have one bar I'm going to be interviewing, a restaurant owner I'm interviewing next week, who does these virtual get-togethers where it'll be like a margarita making class. And they put the word out in advance. Everybody picks up their stuff a week or a few days ahead of time. Then everybody goes live on Zoom. And they even have a tip jar for the bartender who's teaching them how to make the margaritas. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a, you know, it's like a cool thing that you could do with the limited kind of capabilities that we have now. And you're right. It does make people feel comfortable.
Yeah. And then, okay, so think about pancakes. Think about macaroni and cheese. Like, those are things where everyone in the household can make their own personalized creation with those products. You know, you could start with the basic, get fruit and stuff for the pancakes, get, you know, different add-ins like, you know, chili or salsa or whatever for the macaroni and cheese. It's now custom for everybody at the table, and they feel like they've contributed. So what could be better?
Yep. No, it's definitely that's definitely, I see that happening a lot more. And those retailers who don't participate in stuff like that, they're going to have trouble going down the road, because this is going to become the new normal. Sure. Like we've discussed before the podcast, you know, face-to-face is going to always stick around, whether it's events, going out dining, restaurants, hanging out. But we're going to be so used to this, what me and you are doing now, that's going to be a component. And anybody who doesn't get involved in some way, shape, or form now is going to miss out on a big opportunity for engagement down the road.
I would guess that was probably a big part of your conversation that you had with Kim Kircher too last week, because I think like retail dietitians, they are definitely at the front, they should be at the front end of this, because they can like reassure people that they're making the right choices. They can help guide them, you know, of even putting some different things together. And what a great resource for those retailers who already have that in place.
Yeah. You get that dietitian on Instagram Live and kind of walk them through the center store. And, you know, there's so many different things that they could do to stay engaged. And I know they're scrambling now right now to keep out of stocks from happening. But it's still something that, you know, now is the time to be doing that kind of engagement. And, you know, and speaking of out of stocks, I mean, that's happening everywhere, and that's got to, you know, be causing some major issues as well, in addition to, you know, all the shifting.
It is. But, you know, I mean, it's definitely, there's been huge runs on products. You know, I think we're all pretty much, we're not going to see hand sanitizer for a while. You know, face masks and stuff, hopefully those are all going to the right people. But there are some products that, you know, it's out there. It's just a matter of getting it to the destination and getting it on the shelf. And again, it's because the industry didn't anticipate the demand, you know, of that food dollar going back into the home. So it's, trust me, we are in a fortunate place. You know, it might be tough for people right now thinking, look, I really want to get my meat. But in some areas, there hasn't been any problem. So it's different everywhere.
And e-commerce. I mean, now people are shopping for the, you know, food staples online, and that they usually, you know, would get in the store. I think that's going to change people's shopping behavior going down the road. Are you seeing that with your insights?
Absolutely. So first of all, like the total store sales for e-commerce is up 75%. And general food leads that. So e-commerce has always been great for things like vitamins, pet food, you know, big stuff or replenishable items that people were tapping into. But I see this also, Joe, as one of those behaviors that's really going to stay after we emerge from this, because so many people are finding that it is the way to go. You know, it might be click and collect. People would love home delivery, and I think that that's being, you know, we're really challenging the system right now. I know that for people, it's harder to get one of those slots for home delivery, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a challenge. But for companies like Walmart that really had invested heavily in click and collect and fulfillment, they're definitely in a much better place than a lot of retailers because they can accommodate more of it. And I think that as people use this service, see how it works, they're going to stick with it. The one thing I haven't really seen is the adoption more of like buying like fresh products, fresh and perishable items. I think people still kind of struggle with that. Maybe click and collect is a better way to go. You know, I know there's certainly like Ocado, I think, is a more sophisticated system in terms of picking and selecting. Instacart, you certainly, if you can get to know who your shopper is, they can, you know, they'll almost intuitively know what you're going to want or not want. But for most, I think that that fresh is still a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's no doubt e-commerce is going to, you know, be a lot of more of everybody's shopping trips. But what exactly is going to be sold on there? That, you know, certainly the food staples, and that's going to change. But yeah, fresh, I still want to, you know, grab the fruit and, you know, make sure it's good.
Squeeze it, right?
Yep. So that's going to be kind of hard to replace. But then again, you know, if somebody can't find anything, you know, like you mentioned, the willingness to try new products is just something that is happening by default, whether or not they really want to. And, you know, that can lead to a lot of new categories or new brands getting play.
Well, and I do think, you know, especially with e-commerce, what a great opportunity using their platforms to make recommendations, to bundle things together, you know, try and take that merchandising capability that they have so well in the store and bring it online. And that will really, you know, incentivize people to try some of these different products.
Yep, agreed. So now looking ahead, here's my theory. I wanted to bounce it off of you. I think that there's going to be a second wave of what we call essential products, right? The first wave was the food, the toilet paper, the hand sanitizer. But now that we're all stuck at home, it's going to be things like toys. It's going to be things like school and office supplies. It's going to be home spa treatments, right? Because, you know, if you're a parent with a few kids, within the next couple of weeks, toys are really going to be needed, or just arts and crafts, anything to keep the kids busy. You know, beauty supplies, which, sure, they're not, you know, flying off the shelves, but people are going to start doing home spa treatments, bath bombs, things to take care of themselves, things to make them feel a sense of normalcy, or just, you know, let's say, so I'm doing Zoom and I start seeing gray roots coming, you know? I mean, makeup's going to...
What are you saying, Joe?
I'm saying me. Yeah, you know, but I don't care. But it's just, you know, people are going to... They wouldn't think of makeup, but then they're like, wait a minute, I'm on Zoom and I can't look like I just woke up, you know? So, you know, people are learning, or people are home for the first time working from home. A lot of people, not me, I've been doing this for 6 years, but they don't have a stash of pens or pads or computer paper. And, you know, so I think there's going to be a second wave where now, because we're all staying at home for so long, other items are going to start to grow in importance. What are your thoughts on that?
I could not agree with you more. And again, I think that it's a great opportunity for retailers to kind of fill in some of those gaps. I mean, think about, you know, in past recessions, it's been a gradual kind of reining in of expenses. Like, okay, I want to save money, so I'm not going to go get my nails done, or I'm going to cut back on my haircut. Well, now all of that has been, like, the rug has been ripped out from under you. And it's a more affordable, social, comforting thing to do. So put together, you know, at home, you know, nail kits, craft kits, as you mentioned. It's like you might want to, you know, start on a project either for yourself, maybe buy a video with friends or with kids, whatever it happens to be. It's like, help people think of the different things that they might need. From what I understand, and again, it's anecdotal, puzzles, hard to come by because, you know, people are burning through puzzles. So I absolutely agree. And I think any retailer should start with some of those services that people would be doing, you know, would be getting outside of the home, and bringing it in the home.
And again, like you mentioned before, that's where the comfort foods come in. You know, they're going mm-hmm. to want to indulge a little bit. They're going to want to maybe drink a little bit. Although, you know what's interesting? During this time, you know, I have more time. I'm working out more because I'm getting up earlier. I'm going to bed much earlier. And I'm really not drinking, although we've started doing virtual happy hours at ECRM. And all of the teams are doing them individually. And the only problem is because I cut across all the categories, I'm starting to be on regular virtual happy hours, you know.
That's dangerous, yep.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, I feel healthier and more energetic than I did before the coronavirus pandemic, only because I'm stuck in, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not hanging out, I'm getting my sleep, you know, and it's just, and because I'm cooking for myself, it's even healthy. I mean, I've always tried to eat healthy over the past 3 years, but, you know, I'm kind of figuring out how to make better stuff, a bigger variety of produce, just so I don't get bored, you know, so it's strange. It's I never would have expected that.
Well, and I think part of it is you are doing what we're told is like the best possible thing to do. And that is establish a healthy routine, you know, get enough sleep, figure out how you're going to get exercise, eat the best you can, even if it does include a can opener, you know, and I guess in your case, just watch the number of happy hours that you participate
in. Yeah. So I only have a glass of wine with it. So, but you know, routines are the key. I think that's the one thing. And I always recommend it for my colleagues who are home, working from home for the first time, is you have to make a routine and you have to stick to it and set your boundaries, you know, so otherwise right. You'll feel like you're either working all the time or you'll feel lazy and not want to, you know, it's just one or the other. But if you have your set routine, it just kind of, you don't think about it. So I guess to wrap it up, you know, what does the post coronavirus retail and CPG landscape look like, according to everything that you've been researching?
You know, $1 million question, honestly. I think that that companies are going to invest more in how they view their supply chain and how they manage their supply chain. Because again, some retailers have got it nailed. Other companies, you know, have like phantom inventory. They know it's out there, but they don't know where. So I think that'll be something that companies really invest in. I think that definitely I see e-commerce being a lasting legacy of this. There's still definitely a lot of work to be done, some investments that need to be made, but consumers are going to be more comfortable with it, particularly for items that, you know, these shelf-stable items and even replenishment items. What is it going to look like in the store? I don't know. I mean, I still, you know, I think people are still going to go to the store. I think that experience, a clean, healthy experience, is still going to be important to people. But I can't really predict how in-store behavior might permanently change.
I think there may be some new pace setters down the road with everybody getting introduced to all these new products.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, we still have to release our pace setters for 2019. We've been so busy focused on COVID, but that's coming. We're going to be presenting, we're going to have a webinar in early May for pace setters. And Joe, I do want to point out, because we mentioned at the outset of this that things are moving so fast. On our website, iriworldwide.com, we do have a COVID-19 portal and a dashboard, both of which, like a lot of rich reports, but also data that is constantly updated in terms of, you know, what's happening with specific categories and products, state-by-state information. It's a lot of valuable information.
That's right. We'll make sure to have a link to that in the post, as well as the other link that goes to the recorded webcast.
Excellent. Thank you.
So thank you so much. It was great personally to do this with you. It's been too long, and I'd like to, we can continue doing this ongoing, even after this is all over with the coronavirus. And then I'm sure I'll be seeing you. I definitely see a lot of your colleagues at our programs. Anyway, I'm looking forward to getting together with them face to face again, ultimately. But thanks again for all the information, too.
Thanks, Joe. Great talking to you. Bye.
You too. Oh, wait, one more question. Because you're in Chicago, and I do this with some Chicago people, are you a deep dish or a thin crust person?
You know what? I'm both. I'm definitely both. I actually love like paper thin. Is it Neapolitan crust?
Yeah, that's like the New York pizza. That's our pizza.
Yeah, but I like a I like crispy crust. I don't like the New York like soggy.
No, I don't like it soggy either. No, I like it crispy as well. But my favorite's the dollar pizzas. You're getting those little hole in the walls. But I have to say, I have not yet given your Chicago deep dish pizza an honest trial, because the last time I went to Giordano's, it was the first time I went there, and I wanted to get one, and when they told me it was 45 minutes, I was by myself, so I didn't, I was like, you know what, forget it. Just give me a chicken parm with spaghetti. Didn't want to wait that long, but next time I have to go with somebody so I could get some appetizers and chat while we're waiting, and I just couldn't see myself, by myself sitting there for 45 minutes for it. So that was the only downside, but I do plan to try it out one day when I'm in Chicago.
It's awesome. And I love spinach deep dish.
That sounds good. All right. Well, we can always grab one together next time I can get over
there.
Great. So,
thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you again. Stay safe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Please visit IRIWorldwide.com to view the IRI COVID-19 dashboard and insights portal, where you'll have access to daily updates, in-depth reports, as well as observations and implications for the CPG retail industry. Please become a subscriber of IRI Growth Insights and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up in a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at IRIWorldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.